This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Luc-Olivier Dumeblet.
And I'm Yannick Magnan.
And what's our topic for this week, Yannick?
Experimenting with Nicks.
With... Oh, okay. I'm not sure I understood what you just said, so I am curious. But before we start, we have some follow-up. And would you like to go first, Yannick?
Sure. So I'm going to go all the way back to the episode we did about Battle Royales, because a new 99 game came out, and I forgot to talk about it on the last episode, and that is F-Zero 99. If you used to follow me and my friends on Twitter back in the day, this is a game that we have been fantasizing about for many years now, because ever since the 99 concept became sort of this thing that Nintendo would go back to every once in a while, we've been throwing out the idea that F-Zero would be a perfect candidate for this, because there is literally a death race where you race against 99 other cars in F-Zero X on the N64 that would make a good Battle Royale game. And so a couple of weeks ago, they announced it at the Nintendo Direct, and it's based on the Super Nintendo version of F-Zero, and it is an absolutely fantastic little game that I recommend you go check out if you have a Switch, because it's really cool, and it turned out exactly as well as I thought it could back when we were fantasizing about it. And now we are moving on to our next campaign. So we're shitposting now about Kirby Air Ride 99. So come on, Nintendo. 2 years from now, you better give me what I want.
Wow. I'm a bit surprised you didn't mention that to me, because usually every time there's a new 99 game, you ask, or not ask me, but you mention it, and then I go try it for maybe 5 minutes and then stop playing.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one. You should go check it out. I think it's interesting because I think it's the first one of these that doesn't have like the all the other 99 games and the 35, Super Mario 35 had the thing where you could choose who to target in your attacks, and that drastically changed the metagame over time, and I thought it was a really interesting feature, and it was one of my favorite things about those games. F-Zero 99 doesn't have that. Since it's a racing game and you can spin attack, you attack whoever happens to be next to you whenever you do the spin attack. So you have less of a metagaming aspect of that going on. And it's a lot more about racing skill and understanding the flow of how these races play out and playing that to your advantage, which is really interesting nonetheless.
Sounds interesting. I'll go try.
Yeah. And my next item of follow-up is going to be very short, but I got my camera last week.
Ooh, I'm so excited for you.
Yeah, I've been very, very busy, so I have not had a ton of time to go out and shoot things, although I did a little bit last weekend. I had some issues because my camera is too new and none of my devices can understand the RAW format, so that was fun.
Can you remind the listener, what is the camera you bought?
The Sony Alpha 6700.
So the latest APS-C sensor camera from Sony.
Exactly. Wow. Yeah. And I'm pretty blown away from the low light performance, which is to be expected because my other camera was 13 years old. So yeah, I'm happy with my new toy. I'm playing around with it a lot. I'm just sad that I don't have very many interesting things to take photos of around here. I'm getting used to the camera, and we will report on it next year. I've said that my Alpha 6700 episode is going to be next year. I'm only going to briefly allude to it and follow up until then.
Good. But a quick note, though. Being in your own hometown and your own neighborhood is a good composition challenge. Trying to find interesting things in things that you're... in an environment that you used to see daily is not easy, let me tell you about it. But it's something I am personally trying to find a way to make happen, to kind of recreate the spark of being in a new place, in a place you literally see every day, to improve my composition skill. So I hope you'll be able to find something, not a project, but find something where you can do that too.
So that's it for my follow-up. What's yours?
Good. For mine, I'll go with episode 211, Excited and Overwhelmed, when I was talking about new social network. I will put a link in the show notes regarding the Decoder podcast, because Nilay Patel had Mark Zuckerberg again on the show. I think him was semi-related to the Code Conference, or it was kind of a pre-Code Conference guest. I know they've announced a new Quest 3. If you don't want to listen to the whole, I think, 45 minutes episode, there was one remark about Activity Pub and saying that, yes, it's coming. No, there's no timeline. And yes, it's still coming. And yes, we're still interested in decentralized systems. Or social network. So, if you were like me, expecting stronger news about when will Threads support ActivityPub, seems that Zuckerberg is not giving you that just yet.
I literally fell asleep during that episode. It was so bad. I don't care about anything Meta is doing except for Threads, and he basically didn't talk about it.
Right, they were talking about the gist of the episode was talking about AI and Quest 3. So yeah, if you were trying to get any glimpse of information regarding Threads, I think it was maybe a 3-minute section. One thing I could do is include a link to the Verge website where they have a transcript, so you can literally go read what Mark has said. But it's, the TLDR is, it's coming, and that's it. Next up, I have 2 points regarding my previous episode, episode 213. Oh, now that I think of it, I have 3. The title was Full Frame Canary Statement. So, Yannick, I haven't purchased a full frame camera yet.
Good. You're contractually obligated now to do this every time we have follow up for that episode.
Yes. So that's part one of follow up for this episode. Part two is over the last weekend, I've rented a Fujifilm X-T5 to evaluate whether I would like it as a scanning body. Like I mentioned in the last episode, I had the opportunity during one morning a few months ago to be out doing a shoot to try it. I was able to scan 4 rolls, 2 black and white, 2 color, and also was my first time scanning medium format film at the same time. Sadly, the place where I rented the camera, they only had 1 macro lens compatible with the X mount, and it's the Fujinon 60mm macro, and I didn't really like it compared to the one I have from your dad, which is a Nikkor 60mm macro. This one feels more suited to my film scanning needs. But again, it's a good reminder. I really love the X-T5. I think it's going to be a great addition. I haven't bought one yet, so I think we need to add a canary statement about me buying a new camera, a digital camera. But alas, that's not the topic for today. Lastly, on this episode, I am reconsidering certain opinion and options that I've mentioned in this episode because again, I've started to convert some of the color negative film that I've scanned, and sadly, currently, the version 3 of FilmLab app is still in beta, and the beta is still buggy. Again, it's a beta, so I was not expecting it to work on the first beta, but it means that the new color conversion algorithm is stuck in an app that doesn't really work or work meh, and it's unclear what's the timeline for this app to go to GA in its version 3. And I'm really struggling to use or to like the color I get out of version 2. So I haven't bought the bullet yet, but I am strongly considering finding some, I think I need 7 days where I will be able to try a demo version of Lightroom Classic so that I can try a Negative Lab Pro. Because as I mentioned in the previous episode, everybody says you should try Negative Lab Pro and should use Negative Lab Pro. So I'll keep you all posted when I do that, but yeah, that's maybe the other downside, or maybe the other learning from renting a camera from last week is, okay, the macro lens sucked, I didn't really like it, and then yeah, I'm still not happy with the results I get out of a Film Lab app. Compared to black and white, I think for black and white right now it does really great, so those I'm always excited and happy when I see the conversion. But for color, I'm still trying to find my vibe. And last but not least, related to that is, who knows, maybe after those exploration, I could still go back to just going to the lab for those. In the end, the main reason I start to do ohm scanning is because I have a lot of black and white roles that I need to develop myself, and then I have the equipment to scan. So if I'm happy with scanning only black and white, then for now I'll just be scanning only black and white. But I want to give a try to Negative Lab Pro and Lightroom Classic. Last up on scanning, if you are unlike me and you are trying to find another reason to spend too much money on camera gear, I'll drop a link in the show notes from the YouTube channel called Linus and His Camera. I didn't take note of Linus' last name, but you might have seen him. I think he works. That's unclear, but I've seen it in a lot of the promotional stuff from Cinestill. So it's a link to his own YouTube channel. And about a week ago, he posted a video titled "My $10,000 USD." It's not there, but let me put it here. It's my $10,000 film scanner. But yes, he is demoing his Fuji Frontier scanner that he has for himself. So I won't spoil why he has a Fuji Frontier lab scanner at his own place. I'll let you go look at the video. But yeah, if at some point you love so much the way a film lab scans, you could just buy the equipment. It's another viable option, but it's a crazy one for me. But I was super happy to see one running in a video, and kind of, you'll see throughout the 12-minute video, he does a demo of his workflow, what he does, the type of post-processing adjustment he does after the scan. And I was surprised to see that a film scanner from a lab is pretty straightforward to use. So I'm not saying I'm going to buy one, but I wish I had access to one. That's for sure. And that is it for my follow-up.
All right. So I'm going to assume by the way that you answer, well, you didn't answer anything, but the way you reacted to my my topic earlier, that you don't know what Nix is. Is that correct?
Okay. Just to be correct, you said it's Nix?
N-I-X.
No. Maybe you'll explain it and it will be a typical me where you explain it. I'll be like, oh yeah, I've heard of this. But right now, no. And I think you got the reaction you were waiting, because it said you wouldn't tease to me before we started recording what would be the topic.
So I thought there was a possibility that maybe you had heard about it at something like Cocoa Heads recently, because it's definitely more popular in Linux circles than it is in macOS circles, but I think it's gaining some steam pretty much everywhere these days. So, Nix is a bit of an overloaded term, which it makes this difficult to talk about, because you may have heard about one of like the six different things I'm going to talk about that are technically referred to as Nix, but it's actually all of them at once. And Nix is 20 years old this year, which is a good opportunity to focus on this. So let me go through all of the things that Nix is. Nix is a functional programming language that is specialized in package management and software build tasks. It's also a package manager that is based on that programming language, obviously. It's also the collection of packages for that package manager, which is available on multiple platforms and architectures. It's also an ecosystem of tools and extensions built on top of that. And there's also NixOS, which is an immutable Linux distribution that's built on top of all of this madness.
Wow. Okay. You know what? That explains a bit more of your Linux journey of the recent weeks, too. So,
I mean, it technically didn't happen for that reason, as you'll see throughout that episode, which is really interesting.
Yeah, really interesting. Like, I was not expecting
this
that.
Is something I'm exploring in the context of work, not personal fascination. You'll see why when we get to that part of the episode. But I'm going to start working through that hierarchy in that order, because you sort of have to go through that order to get the whole sense, the big picture. So let's start off with the programming language. There's an object you can import from the standard library called Nix packages. And on this object, there are a bunch of properties, and all of those properties are all of the packages. So it's just this lazy evaluated object with all of the packages dangling off of it, and you can just go and get one. And if you do go and get one, it's probably going to get installed somehow. The basic gist of how the programming language works is that it's a super functional thing. It's like purely functional language and all that jazz. So if you're a big Haskell fan, you're going to love this. And everything is an expression with inputs and outputs. So your inputs can be packages or source code, and your outputs can be the artifacts of your build or install process. Although there is a wide variety of inputs that are supported and a wide variety of outputs. So some example inputs that you can put into there. Obviously, an existing Nix package or collection. So if you want to install Terraform, you can just call nixpackages.terraform and it'll install Terraform. If you want to install a collection of packages like the nixpackages.androidsdk, that is a group of all of the different development packages for Android software, you can just get that entire collection with that one value. Another input that's supported is source code files. These can be fetched from Git, Subversion, HTTP, or less popular source control systems. It can even just be a file on disk with a validated SHA-256 hash. Because yes, you can use it for package management. You can also use it as a build system. It can also be a customized variant of an existing Nix package. So let's say I want to have nixpackages.terraform, but I want to pin it to a specific older version of that package. I can do that, and I can do it dynamically in any file that defines packages I want to install, which is really cool. And you can do the same thing for collections. So going back to that nixpackages.androidsdk thing, Android SDK is configurable with about 24 customizable properties that can be tweaked to match exactly with what's in your Gradle build dependencies for your Android apps. So you can have exactly the right version of CMake. I'm mentioning CMake because for some reason CMake is always the thing that crashes whenever I try to build Android apps on a different SDK. So it's always whining about the stupid CMake version. Like, they're binary compatible, but it's still not good enough. It has to be the exact version. And you can just plug that exact version in nixpackages.androidsdk, and it will make sure it's there. So those are some example inputs you can have in Nix expression. And then the outputs are really interesting because they're not just what you'd expect. What you'd expect is like, oh, sure, installed packages on my system, right? That's the obvious thing. You can also have installed packages in a user scope, which I'll get to in a little bit, in a temporary scope, which is another thing that we'll get to in a little bit. You can generate a Docker container image that has all of your desired packages available inside it. And importantly, it can be built in a reproducible manner, which is not generally the case for Docker containers. You can generate portable application binaries for Linux software in one of two formats, AppImage and Snap. You can cross-compile literally everything I just said to any architecture that's supported. Or you can just have boring old build artifacts for 30 supported programming languages if you just want to use it like a build system. You can point it at a Go project, it'll build a Go project. You can point it as a .NET project, it'll build a .NET project. It knows about a lot of these languages, and it can just spit out binaries for those if you need it.
So that's neat.
Yeah, it's a pretty flexible little toolkit. And turns out they built a package manager on top of it. And this is the part I'm pretty excited about because it handles multiple scopes. So usually when
Wait. You are excited about a package manager? You.
There are different types of package managers, right? So the ones I usually complain about are programming language package managers.
Fair.
And operating system package managers, they have their ups and downs. They're not all perfect, obviously. There are some that I like way more than others. I like Apt. I like Pac-Man. I like Nix.
Oh, okay. I was not expecting you to give your opinion about Nix just yet, but the fact that you entered that you like Package Manager, I was like,
I like Linux distribution package managers, let's just say that. I don't like Homebrew. It's not in my tops. But to use that as an example, If you use Homebrew, Homebrew has a single unified scope. If you install something, it's available to the entire system. And that's what's called the system scope in Nix. You can also have a user scope, which is only available when you're logged into your personal user account. So this is something that I've run into with shared machines at work, where we have multiple user accounts on the same laptops. Homebrew does not deal with this well. I don't know if you've had to deal with this yourself.
No, not really. When I install things through Homebrew, it's for me, and usually either it's on my personal computer for development tools or my work laptop, which, guess what? We're not really sharing or having shared computers. I think the only example I could say that's shared, but again, it's just a build agent. It's the build agent machines.
Yeah.
But like, we would expect that like a CI agent is running on it, and it's not you connecting to it on your own session to do things with it.
So by default, Homebrew basically sets all of the permissions to the person who sets up Homebrew and not to a group of users. So what happens is if you share the whole thing, your permissions are all fucked and you can't do anything with Homebrew on your other account, which really sucks for shared machines. Like we have like 3 Macs at work that we share amongst the developers. So we do actually have multiple user accounts and stuff like that on those machines. And Homebrew does not deal with that nicely. Nix, it's very clean. It lets you install stuff directly to your user scope. In fact, by default, it installs stuff into your user scope if you are using it in the imperative mode. So it's just a lot cleaner for that. And then there's what I'm calling anonymous or temporary scopes. And these are just scopes you can spin up whenever you'd like, as many as you'd like. These avoid polluting your system namespace with a bunch of stuff that you're thinking about using. You can use a command called nix shell. And if you just do like nix shell -p htop, you're going to see a progress bar. And once the download is done, you have a tiny little shell environment that can suddenly run htop in this tiny little thing. And if you close it, eventually the nix environment will garbage collect it and say, hey, this was a temporary scope. We can flush it. And there's no commitment to trying any single package. You can just type nix shell -p, the name of your package, and you can try it in a safe environment without accidentally hosing your entire system.
This is cool.
It is very, very cool. And it is kind of the foundation of everything of the rest of the episode.
Hey, I do understand that if you got used to that feature, that you, I can see the direct correlation of not liking Homebrew, because I would say maybe my main gripe is when you're trying to find tools, you really end up having to have install them. And then if you're like, oh, I don't like it, uninstalling it, I always have this thought in my mind, like, did it really uninstall everything? All of it, the dependency. I think Homebrew is good for that, but there's always the small doubt after I do brew uninstall.
Every couple of years, I feel like my brew installation has become so fucked that I just want to clean reinstall the entire operating system. And I'm thinking about doing it right now, actually. And like, I'm pretty sure that if I were to reinstall, I'm probably not going to install Homebrew and I'm going to switch to Nix on my Mac. But we'll get to that. So take that into consideration. Anonymous scopes. Very cool concept that not a lot of package managers are able to do elegantly. And everything else on the rest of this episode is going to be based on top of that. The other thing that's interesting is, of course, it handles both imperative and declarative package management. So you can use it from the command line like you would with Homebrew or apt or pacman. You can just type in like nixenv-i capital A and then the name of your package. It's a weird syntax, but Linux people are like that sometimes. Like pacman isn't exactly the most user-friendly thing either, but I love it. So you can use it like that if you want. And like I said, by default, I think it throws everything into your user scope. So if you're comfortable using package managers that way, you can do it that way. You can also declare your package management operations as .nix scripts, like I mentioned earlier. And generally, the community recommends to use the declarative approach, but I haven't really seen any kind of reason why you should feel bad for using the imperative one other than it's not cool. So next up is the actual Nix packages package collection. And this is where I got drawn in. And this is where I started thinking about introducing it at work. So it's available across the three most used operating systems for development. So it's available on Linux, on 32-bit Intel, 64-bit Intel, and ARM64. It's available on Mac, on 64-bit Intel, and ARM64. And it is most importantly available on Windows via WSL2. And that's basically what drew me into checking out Nix. My company has a bunch of developers using each of those platforms and all of those architectures, aside from 32-bit Intel. In projects, we have dependencies that are defined in function of whatever platform the tech lead was using at the time the project was started. And this introduces a lot of friction whenever someone from another platform is brought onto a project, or if a dev needs to change their development platform mid-project, because they will quickly realize, oh no, my dependencies are in a platform dependent way. And being able to define those dependencies in a platform independent way could streamline that process a lot. And what's really cool with Nix packages is most packages are available across all of those OSs and all of those architectures, which is really, really nice. Like, the main exceptions are graphical Linux applications, which are only available under Linux, and they won't run correctly under WSL2 on Windows 10. I believe they work on Windows 11. So if you aren't relying on graphical applications to do your development as part of your project dependencies, which I think, like, aside from Android Studio, maybe there isn't really anything I can think of, or like Xcode, but Xcode is weird because it's not packaged in Nix. Aside from like those big IDE packages, I can't think of very many things that we are missing out on due to that. The other thing that's interesting about Nix is it's offered in two different types of channels. So there's stable, which is released twice a year. And if you look at the age of the packages in those stable channels, they're about comparable to any other 6-month regular release Linux distribution. So if you look compare it to Ubuntu or Fedora and those same releases, they more or less have the same versions of everything. So you're not way behind. And there's also unstable, which is a rolling release like you would be used to with Homebrew. And those sort of match with Arch Linux versions, Homebrew versions. They stay pretty up to date. So you're basically given the choice which of these approaches you value most, and both are viable. Now, obviously, everyone in your fleet generally is going to want to be on the same channel if you actually want to use this for shared development, because you don't want your scripts to be going off and running the unstable version. But that's something more to coordinate on the org side and less on the configuration side. So now let's start talking about this ecosystem of tools that's really exciting. And the first one is, I've only used one of these that I'm going to talk about. It's the one that I've tried to start introducing at work. And then the other ones I'm going to talk about more speculatively, because I'm still a beginner at all of this, and I've been too busy with other projects to actually push any of my research any further. So the first tool here is direnv and the use Nix hook. So direnv, if you're not familiar with it, is a shell hook that you can use. You can configure this in bash, zsh, tcsh, fish, and elvish. And basically all it does is it runs a script when you enter a directory. It runs .envrc. If that file is present in a directory, it'll just run it. And its standard library comes with a command called usenix, which spins up an anonymous scope based on the contents of a file called default.nix or shell.nix. So what this enables you to do is to create a file in your Git repo that contains all your dependency declarations, and whenever you cd into that repo from your shell, boom, you've got all the dependencies installed if they weren't installed already, and they're made available to you as long as you're in that folder and they're the right versions.
Hmm. That's neat.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Because I guess you could put that at the root of your Git repos, and then you just move away from one Git repo to the other, and boom, everything is installed.
Yep. When I was switching, so I've been wielding three machines to work every single day for the past couple days. And for the projects in which I actually put that in place, with some exceptions, which we'll get to a little bit later when I talk about the pain points, I can just switch between my machines, clone the Git repo, and basically not have to worry about what platform I'm using whenever I want to do some stuff, with, of course, the exception of if I'm using like a React Native project and I want to deploy to iOS, I kind of need Xcode. But aside from that, I don't really have to think about which device I'm on. I just clone the repo, and a couple seconds later, I'm ready to work, which is great. Obviously, like you may be thinking, automatically run a script every time I run into a directory. That sounds super exploitable. And it's true. It is super exploitable. Luckily, Direnv keeps track of like what the hash of the file is. And if it's ever changed or if you haven't allowed it the first time, it'll ask you to go audit the code and then manually allow the execution of the script. So sure, it's still exploitable if your people aren't doing their due diligence. But they should. and then once you've typed Direnv allow, it'll just run the install process and you're up and running. And it's really cool. The next generation kind of that is called Flakes. Default.nix is kind of a feature of Nix Shell, which comes with the Nix environment. Flakes are really like the 2.0 version of that. They exist specifically for use in software projects to define dependencies within the Nix environment. And they offer a lot more resilient and reproducible ways to do so. Like, for example, default.nix doesn't have like a lock file or anything like that that contains the hashes of the exact things that you need. But this will automatically generate one once you've installed it once. And there are a bunch of other really cool features tied up in Flakes. Flakes have been an experimental feature of Nix since 2021, but there is heavy campaigning to get it merged as an actual feature very soon. And basically, like, if you go look around the Nix community, everyone I can find has been using Flakes in production for a long time now. So it's kind of an experimental feature in name only. You have to enable it yourself, but everybody enables it, so it's kind of strange. I know that there are some Direnv plugins that do actually allow you to integrate with Flakes for automatic dependency management, instead of relying on the default use Nix behavior, which is what I'm using. And I still have a very surface level understanding of, of Nix in general, but also of Flakes. So I haven't actually delved into them yet. And sort of my approach to all of this is I wanted to see like how much return can I get for very little investment. And I feel like I got a pretty good return on my very low investment with Nix so far. And that's why I haven't really yet taken the time to learn Flakes properly enough to know how to use them. Although when we'll get to the pain points and limitations section later, you'll see that I should probably start learning Flakes soon, because the approach I'm using right now is very rudimentary. But that was kind of always part of the plan and of my understanding of what I was doing. The next tool I want to mention is the blingiest of them all. It's Home Manager. It's probably the thing you have heard about if you've heard about Nix, because it's a declarative framework for configuring all of your local user applications and preferences. And if there's one thing that developers love to do, it's tweaking their development setup and not working on their actual development.
That's fair.
Giving them like this easy way to have a single file portable configuration that they can bring to any other machine is just like, it's bait. It's just like, it's productivity killed immediately by introducing this concept. So what this lets you do is it lets you declare all your preferences in a single file, run a rebuild command, and then Home Manager will automatically generate all of the .dot files for all of your different software for you. If you declare any app-specific preferences, it'll automatically install those apps to your user scope if they don't already exist. So, for example, if you say, I want line numbers on the left column of Vim, but Vim isn't installed, it'll automatically install Vim. If you declare an email account, but you don't have a mail client installed, I think you actually have to mention which mail client you want it to install, but it'll install that mail client. And you can like micromanage a bunch of stuff. You can manage shell plugins. There's built-in support for many plugin package managers within other shell apps. So whether it's all of the shells, Bash, ZSH, all of that stuff, NeoVim, you can just dump all your plugin configuration into your Home Manager config file, and it will automatically take care of that for you. So it abstracts away a lot of the headaches of managing all of the various hierarchies of .dot files in your home directory by just giving you a single file that can automatically be built into that hierarchy of .dot files, which is an interesting concept, although it also kind of hurts my brain to think that anyone who actually does this has to write a home manager plugin if they want to plug something that isn't supported. I feel like just writing scripts and using Stowe and stuff is a lot simpler to manage weird edge cases than this is. But that's kind of a running theme in the Nix community. Is people love to go all into Nix. They love to go completely all in. And that's kind of also a problem sometimes, because it's hard to find information from people who haven't gone all in on how you actually use the basics. But yeah, Home Manager, from what I've heard, this is how a lot of people have sold developers on Nix internally in their companies. Is like they were talking about all of the actual work advantages and they were like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they saw Home Manager and they were like, oh shit, I need that right now. So tells you a lot about how developers work. But if you wanted to go even more all in than that, what you could do is you could install NixOS.
Okay.
NixOS is essentially the Home Manager mentality applied to its logical extreme. Instead of just managing what happens within your home directory, what if you manage your entire Linux distribution install from a single configuration file?
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Asterisk, it's actually two configuration files. There is one that is hardware agnostic and the other one handles all your drivers and shit. Otherwise, the second you get onto an NVIDIA machine, your machine explodes.
That sounds like a reference I was supposed to acknowledge, but I'm not sure I acknowledge.
I mean, NVIDIA on Linux has been a disaster for over a decade now, so it's not really a reference so much as it is the truth.
I'm not surprised, but they didn't know about that.
Yeah, it's kind of a shit show, but we're not going to get into it this episode. It lets you write an entire configuration file, and you can just run NixOS rebuild, and it will automatically do whatever it needs to so that your Linux distribution install matches what's in that config file. Much like on iOS, on Android, and Macs with SIP, System Integrity Protection, the system partition is immutable, so you as a user cannot manipulate system files directly. You can only configure things through the configuration.nix file. And what this gets you is entirely deterministic builds. If you use the same NixOS channel and the same config file, you will get the same system state on the other side, no matter what, plus or minus your hardware configuration file.
This is pretty cool.
Yeah. It means like, if, for example, if you're a company and you have a fleet of devices that you want to have completely consistent, you could even just, if you make sure that all the hardware is the same, you could just have your two files in a repo somewhere and just install base NixOS, install those things, run a command, you're done. Of course, you could also image your stuff, but this will ensure that your system partition is always sort of staying consistent going forward, and that your users aren't going to be adding and removing packages to the base image as well. So that's fun. Also, because of how your packages are stored on disk in NixOS, you get free system rollbacks. So if a modification to your configuration file or an update breaks your system, in your bootloader, when you boot your machine, you can just choose the previous generation. And if you want to, you can just say, I want to force a rollback, and it just happens. By default, it'll just keep stuff indefinitely, but you can schedule a garbage collection for the Nix store to not keep packages for any generations older than whatever threshold you'd like. I think most people say 30 days, but honestly, you could just say like the last week probably and be fine. So how this is playing out is that NixOS is very much the tinkerer's dream Linux distribution right now, much like how Arch Linux was in the early 2010s. Both kind of do the same thing. They're both primarily binary-based distributions that target enthusiasts with higher than average technical proficiency. Like, you definitely need to be comfortable in the terminal and know what the components of a Linux distribution are to be able to set up NixOS for yourself. Your entire interface to this Linux distribution is a text file, not a GUI, so you need to be comfortable with that. And I guess sort of because of that, it also has inherited a lot of the toxicity and elitism that comes from the Arch Linux community, because now everyone is super proud they can configure their Linux distro from a config file instead of installing it from an installer that would do everything for them. But yeah, it's very, very cool. It's very trendy. Although the reception has not entirely been positive, because if you're a tinkerer, sometimes you like tinkering with things directly, and tinkering with things indirectly through a configuration file can be frustrating because it kind of limits how much you can tinker with stuff. So if you're a hardcore tinkerer, you may be drawn away from NixOS because if the customization options that you are expecting are not exposed by the NixOS configuration file format, not much you can do about it because the entire system partition is immutable. Not everyone is on board, but in general, the configuration-based approach and the immutability aspect of it does lead to more stable systems over time than what you would see with an Arch Linux situation, where it's not a joke on Arch Linux if you don't do your updates regularly and you just leave the system turned off for like a month and then you run your updates. If you weren't getting all of those incremental updates in between, your system might just not work anymore. Because you skip those updates. And with NixOS, because it's sort of always rebuilt from the config file up, that isn't supposed to happen. And there's a lot of operations within package management in general where if you're dealing with mutable stuff, there's a lot more risk implied in that than there is with immutable distributions. Anyway, that's sort of the whirlwind tour of the ecosystem that I wanted to go through. Now I want to talk more about pain points and questioning, like stuff that I have unanswered questions to or stuff that caused me trouble throughout these experimentations. And the first one of these is probably the biggest deal breaker so far, which is pinning to older versions is really awkward and not necessarily cross-platform, which like your top feature is that you make cross-platform dependency management really easy, but then you shoot yourself in the foot by making versioning really hard. And essentially the way you have to do it right now, if you're using the setup that I have, is you tell it, install whatever the current version of this package was when Nix packages was a git commit with this hash, and you give it a long ass hash.
Okay.
You can't refer to version numbers. You have to give it a git commit hash. So this is awkward because there's no guarantee that the current version for macOS is actually matching the same git commit as the Linux version. So you can get scenarios where I have a project where I need a very specific version of Terraform, and I get it on Linux, but the macOS version was not updated to that version. I get a much older version on macOS, and they're not in sync. So that's awkward. The other thing is the only interfaces you really have to figure out what these hashes are and how to ask for a specific version is to either use a weird third-party search engine that was developed by someone who was frustrated with this and developed their own, or walk back through the GitHub history manually to identify the current hash of the build you want. Not great. The weird third-party search engine does not support Nix packages on macOS past version 20.03, so that was 2020 March. Okay, that's not great either.
I'm a bit surprised though that sorry for the interruption, but I'm a bit surprised that you cannot use git tags, because in the end they're kind of going back to a git hash. Huh.
Yeah, but the tags that are in the Nix packages repo refer to releases of the Nix packages repo. They do not refer to releases of individual packages.
I see.
So you have to go look at the file history on each package's definition to go walk back to the version you want. And luckily, like the commits have a nice format where they are consistently labeled, so you're not going to be tearing your hair out reading different commit formats for like 15 years. But it's still not a great experience. Now, this is where I'm perfectly willing to admit that I might be missing something. I do know that Nix does seem to have some mechanism for holding like parallel tracks of the same package. For example, Node has a current version and an LTS version. And I know that there is a way to specifically call up that you want the Node LTS version by its major version. But I can't find documentation on how to do that, which sucks. Also, just in general, like not being able to specify a dependency by version number that would make sense to a regular human and could represent different states of the Nix packages git repo for different platforms gets a big thumbs down for me. Maybe Flakes account for this. I would really hope that Flakes account for this. Otherwise, it would really suck. but I don't know. Next pain point is it's unclear how to conditionally install packages by environment. So some of these packages, some of these repositories that I'm adding Nix files to are React Native projects. And when you're building React Native projects for iOS, unfortunately, you still need CocoaPods. CocoaPods is not available on Linux.
It's not on Linux? Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, what use would it have on Linux?
That's fair. It does make sense that it's macOS only, but I don't know why. I kind of was under the assumption that it also had a Linux.
I mean, it's a Ruby package. I'm sure it'll run, but it won't do anything useful without Xcode there.
Fair.
So since Nix is a programming language, I assume I should be able to say conditionally install CocoaPods only on macOS. But for some reason, I'm having a really hard time finding documentation that tells me if this is even possible, which feels like a bad sign. I could also use this to sort of hack around the old version thing where I could say, hey, my Terraform package, install this hash on Linux, install this hash on macOS, and I could circumvent that issue a little bit. What I found is that a lot of the Nix documentation assumes that you are interested in learning the Nix programming language first, and your interest in package management tasks are secondary to that, and I think that should be completely flipped. I think most end users would rather know how to solve their package management problems first and get invested in the language once they've actually kind of used it to solve their use case. That seems obvious to me, but I guess that's not how you think if you're a mathematician developing a functional programming language for package management.
Let me talk to you about pure function.
Exactly. And derivations and all that good shit.
Oh, yeah. It reminds me of university.
Yep, pretty much. So that's the problem is I don't think everyone wants to take a class on functional programming before they can install packages. And I think a lot of work could be done in the documentation front of things to sort of work around that. And I think like a lot of the times people are going to say, oh, well, if you want a more user-friendly front end to Nix, go use NixOS. And I'm like, yeah, but I need to use a Mac. So I can't install NixOS to build my iOS apps. Because NixOS, because it has the configuration like facade in front of everything, it does in fact simplify a lot of complex tasks. But it also doesn't tell you how to solve those complex tasks when you can't resort to that, which is kind of a problem. Another thing, language package manager versus system package manager debate. This is specifically for languages like Python and Perl and all that stuff, which they have language-specific package managers, but they only have ones that install in a global scope. And to me, as a user, it's not clear if each anonymous scope that I create within Nix gets its own package environment, or if, because of the deduplication that happens behind the scenes, they are actually all using the same installed package base. I can't find an answer to that. I would have to experiment to see what the answer is. And then you get back into the old problem, if that's the case, that you're having applications and scopes pollute a global namespace, which is the entire point you want to avoid. Nix also packages a bunch of libraries for these languages that are also available through pip, cpan, whatever package manager you're thinking about. And it's not really clear to me what's supported with those languages, what the expected workflow is for these languages, and probably most importantly, what to do if half my dependencies are available and packaged within Nix and the other half aren't. Like, what do I do in that scenario? It's not clear. I could probably figure it out with a couple hours of messing around and ruining installs of Python. But I feel like I shouldn't have to. It should just be there. And I guess the last point that I would bring up is both official and community documentation assume you are heavily invested in Nix already. And that sort of goes to what I was talking about, where you have to take the functional language programming course to actually learn how to install your packages. So that's more on the official side. And on the community side, it's very hard to find documentation that doesn't assume you're running and bought into Home Manager, for example. Like, if you don't want to install Home Manager to manage your home directory, how do I solve these problems that you are solving with Home Manager? the answer shouldn't be install Home Manager. It should be something coherent. And it's just very hard to find easy answers to fundamental problems with Nix that you would have no problem finding for apt-get. Actually, it's not even apt-get anymore. This is how long it's been since I've used apt. It's just apt now. You don't type the get anymore. A lot has changed in Debian for the 12 years I haven't used it. Just at a high level, package management documentation is nowhere where it needs to be accessible to end users. And I kind of feel bad recommending it to coworkers if it's too technical. Like, I know that they're developers, they know how to figure it out, but not all developers necessarily are as enthusiastic about learning new languages as I am. I will learn new languages for just to say that I have, whereas a lot of the people at work just want to learn what they need to do their job and not overload themselves with other stuff. And both of those are completely valid approaches. And because Nix is so reliant on learning a functional programming language, I think that's going to be a barrier for a lot of people. So I don't know if there could be front ends put around Nix, like the core of what Nix is doing, to make it more approachable to those kinds of people and more palatable in these kinds of environments. Because right now, the way it is, and with the documentation in the way it is, I think it's a hard sell for more diverse developer teams, I would say. But yeah, that is sort of the summary of what I've been doing with Nix over the past 2-3 months. I think 2 months. Yeah, it's not directly related to my adventures with Linux distributions recently, although my Linux laptop is mostly installing packages through Nix.
Ooh, nice. Okay, so you're living the life.
Yeah. I mainly use it to manage dependencies for personal development projects. So whenever I make new repos now, there's always a default.nix file in it that installs all the dependencies I need to get going. And I basically don't use... I'm using Linux Mint Debian Edition on my laptop. I don't ever install Debian's dev packages directly. I always use whatever is available in Nix. And it's served me pretty well so far. There's some weird stuff sometimes, like if you need to use package config to build anything vaguely related to GNOME, you need to learn some more Nix flags that you can pass. But it's nothing terrible. It's comparable to figuring out any other build system. So I don't know. It's pretty sweet. I like it, but it's definitely not for everyone. And like this episode was never meant to be evangelizing Nix and trying to get people to check it out. I think it's a useful thing to know that it is out there. And kind of the running theme of the season right now seems to be like, pick the right tool for the job. This can be the right tool for the job for certain types of jobs. And it's good to know that it's out there and know its limitations and all of that stuff. And if it can be useful to you, then those are basically my notes from the past few months.
Good. Is that it?
Yep.
Perfect. I'm sure Yannick will have some links for the show notes.
Yep.
And you can find them at limitlesspossibility.net/214 for 214. You can find our back catalog of episodes at limitlesspossibility.net. The show is on the Fediverse. We are at @limipo_podcast at mastodon.social. We are also there individually. I am @luco@mastodon.social, and you can find Yannick at
sakarina@icosahedron.website.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.